Jackson, W266, DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
A Vatican tribunal weighing a financial fraud case has heard from Pope Francis from a secret recording. Jackie Quinn has details.
The broadcast of Pope Francis's own voice in the courtroom marked a new chapter in a trial that's already seen plenty of twists and turns. The conversation was with an accused cardinal over the Holy See's payments to free a nun held hostage by militants. Author and Vatican analyst Marco Politi calls this trial a mess.
Now we don't know whether the Pope has to come as witness in front of the court, which would be unbelievable.
He says
the power struggles within the church have become reckless. There is no more respect for the high authority of the Pope.
Vatican judges are trying to determine who, if anyone, is criminally responsible for losing tens of millions of euros in Vatican assets. I'm Jackie Quinn.
And I'm Ben Thomas, AP News.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The long-term effects of Wisconsin's redistricting process were apparent in the November elections. A nonpartisan good government group says voters who feel overlooked should not give up. Mike Moen reports.
Democratic Governor Tony Evers won re-election, but Republicans maintained strong control over the legislature. Jay Heck of the group Common Cause points out that Evers maintains his veto power, but he says Republicans still carry a lot of weight, partly because they keep redrawing the maps to their advantage.
There were more votes cast for Democratic candidates statewide than Republican, but the contrast with the legislative elections in the state is so sharp, it almost makes laughable the idea that we have a true representative democracy.
Researchers have said that over the past decade, Wisconsin has produced among the most gerrymandered voting district maps in the country. Heck says voters should look ahead to next year's state Supreme Court election with the hope a less politicized court could eventually revisit the issue. And there could be legislation floated again next year to develop an independent redistricting process. In the meantime, he says the current maps allow a smaller percentage of voters to decide who controls the legislature, leaving other voters behind in fair representation.
Urban areas in Wisconsin have suffered a decline in the shared revenue from the state, even though those people pay taxes.
Heck says that means less support for schools, roads, and other public needs. Analysts say lawmakers representing these areas get packed into boundaries that ultimately diminish their voices at the state capitol. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
Are you dreading going into work every day? Do you want a career where you can earn more and feel appreciated? If you answered yes, then Sigma Castings, a division of Sigma Engineered Solutions in Marcus Ann and Jackson, is your answer. They are more than a company. They are a family of dedicated experts that span the continents. Here are a few ways they make you feel appreciated. Entry-level pay is $18 an hour with regular performance reviews. After 90 days, you get 80 hours of vacation plus 11 paid holidays. They will give you a $2,000 sign-on, stay-on bonus. They offer a robust benefit package with low premiums and great coverage, and their 401k will blow you away. Now hiring first shift, Monday through Friday, 5 a.m. till 2 p.m. Start your new career today at Sigma Castings in Markazan and Jackson. Find them on Indeed or call 920-260-8560 and wake up happy to go to work.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
27% of the American workforce, and some even say 30%, were in unions who had representation and who clearly did not have to worry about whether or not they were going to get their fair share. But I'm definitely going to fight for people who get the short end of the stick in this society only because they don't have representation. That's who I am.
Check out the Earl Ingram Show every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. only on WAUK 540 a.m. 101 FM, The Shaw.
What is dedication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy. And I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much, from the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night and every moment in between. It really is so special, and boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning once again. Welcome back to our second hour on this Saturday, December 10th, our weekly analysis, our discussion, our review of stories, the big stories in law and government and justice in America. We spent most of the first hour talking about these two major Supreme Court cases that had oral argument before the nine justices just this past week, Moore versus Harper, having to do with this ISLT theory that implicates the role of courts in election disputes. And then second, this case called 303 Creative versus Alanis, having to do with the claims out of the state of Colorado that a website provider can discriminate against the LGBT potential customers out there based upon a belief that the same-sex marriage of potential clients of hers is wrong. And again, the Supreme Court, looking at both of those cases, probably going to be issuing its opinions in them sometime in May or June of this coming year. With respect to this 303 Creative versus Alanis case, again, a fairly strong indication that a majority of the members of the Supreme Court are inclined to issue some decision in favor of the web designer who is opposed to same-sex marriage and refuses to engage in commercial transactions based upon her belief that she's got this free speech right under the First Amendment to create websites celebrating same-sex marriages, she says, would be contrary to her faith, despite the state law that prohibits discrimination based on sexual orientation. So that coming out of the Supreme Court, we're not certain. It's always difficult to know with clarity. But in that particular case, unlike Moore, where there's a bit more sense that there may be five justices who are willing to get rid of this unfounded theory about courts and about the exclusive prerogative of state legislatures to decide federal elections, unlike that case, the case involving the same-sex marriage prohibition, if you will, imposed by this website designer in Colorado, that one appears to be headed toward a ruling in favor of that web designer. We'll see. We'll see what comes out of that, hoping once again that whatever the Supreme Court does, it is narrow and specific such that the important work that has been done in the area of affirming and reestablishing, if you will, the rights of all Americans to enjoy life and liberty are not compromised. We know, as I discussed right before the break, that in Obergefell versus Hodges, the Supreme Court did in fact acknowledge that there's a constitutional, again, a privacy right for same-sex couples to marry. And as a result of things said by at least one Supreme Court justice in the all-important case of Dobbs of this past June, that is Clarence Thomas, suggesting that privacy rights in other areas might also be the subject of renewed attention by the Supreme Court, specifically identifying same-sex marriage, the subject of this case in 303 Creative, that all of that prompted the Congress this past week to do something very significant. Again, walking across Capitol Hill from the United States Supreme Court to the United States Congress, where you know what happened. Just this past week, the House of Representatives gave its final approval to some legislation that would mandate federal recognition for same-sex marriages. A huge piece of legislative work. A bipartisan coalition of lawmakers, as you know from the reporting, voting in favor of this measure in the waning days of this Congress, the 117th Congress. 169 members of the House of Representatives voted in opposition to that. 258 of them, including not just all of the Democrats, but also Republicans, voted in favor of this landmark legislation, previously having passed by the United States Senate, now on to the president for his signature, anticipated probably in the coming days. The law itself explicitly repeals the 1996 Defense of Marriage Act. Remember that DOMA? That was also the subject of a Supreme Court case. This makes it clear legislatively that DOMA no longer on the books. That DOMA Act, if you will, defined marriage as a union between a man and a woman, and allowed states to refuse to honor same-sex marriages performed in other states. DOMA, of course, ruled unconstitutional by a prior Supreme Court, and now, as a result of this legislation passed by both houses of Congress this past week, also rejected explicitly by our legislature. Once the president signs this new legislation into law, the Respect for Marriage Act, will also prohibit states from denying the validity of an out-of-state marriage based upon sex, race, or ethnicity. And so, huge accomplishment. Again, all of this in the area, not just of LGBT rights, oh, that's the core of it, but also going to this issue of what is privacy rights, what do they mean in America today? What does civil rights mean human rights? And, of course, as a result of this, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, in one of her final acts, she said this is one of the capstones of her career, announced the tally very triumphantly this past Thursday. She said, "Today we stand up for the values the vast majority of Americans hold dear, a belief in the dignity, the beauty, and the divinity, the spark of divinity in every person, and aiding respect for the love that's powerful, binding people together." She made that speech in the well of the House of Representatives after the floor vote, and called upon all Americans, of course, to support that going forward. The president himself called this action by the Congress a critical step to ensure that Americans have the right to marry the person they love. And so that, again, legislative action, all in connection with a lot of focus this past week at the Supreme Court and then also in the halls of Congress, having to do with the future of LGBT rights, institutionalizing now in the legislation of our nation the right of same-sex couples to marry, even as across that parking lot on Capitol Hill in the United States Supreme Court, questions about whether or not the First Amendment prohibits a law in Colorado from prohibiting a website provider from discrimination against the LGBT community. A lot to consume there as well. So we'll see how all of that plays out. We know the president's going to be signing that major's legislation this coming week. Once again, that the Respect for Marriage Act. We appreciate so much our callers on all of this. And Jean has called in this morning from Eau Claire. Jean, delighted to have you with us this morning on Morning Cannolis.
Thank you so much for this outstanding legal class. Every Saturday morning, I recommend people tell their friends. It's in a layman's language. You're explaining everything outstandingly. And it's just, I hate to even call the question because I'm learning so much. I'll tell you, I got my papers and pens ready every Saturday morning. Now, I just wanted to bring up something to you. Maybe you don't want to talk about it right now, but it's something that I have a concern about, and maybe you can explain it or bring it up in the future. And that is the House Committee on the Judiciary this week on December 8th held a hearing of the Undue Influence Operation Higher Court and Politicking at SCOTUS. And it had to do something with H.R. 7647, and it had to do with the influences on SCOTUS, and without any rules and regulations or governance of ethics and conflicts of interest and things like that. And they had a witness, a religious leader, a Reverend Robert L. Schenck, and he was one of the witnesses about influencing some of the judges and something going back and forth. A lot of it, unfortunately, there was a lot of problems with watching it on YouTube. There was interference and things, so I didn't get all of it. But to me, it was really concerning. I was really pleased to see that the House was looking into this. However, a lot of the Republicans, especially even from the state of Wisconsin who were on that committee, didn't even really want to look at putting in some kind of regulation or encouraging the judges to do it themselves, or the Congress would have to do it. Are you familiar with that at all?
I am, and it's a great question. It's entirely appropriate, Gene. I'm so appreciative of your call this morning. I thank you for the very nice complimentary words about the civics lesson that we engage in here every morning, but especially appreciate your phone call about this because it's directly relevant to the things we've been talking about here on a weekly basis. So let's get into that just a little bit. And I will, in fact, take that on. This, again, the House Judiciary Committee, in its waning days and weeks of this Congress, the 117th Congress, we know well that with the 118th Congress, as the Republicans take over, the new chair of that committee will be Jim Johnson, and he is going to be, obviously, the head prescribing what that committee is going to be doing. So before that happens, this House Judiciary Committee, still under the control of the Democrats, does, in fact, have this hearing. And what are they looking at? They're looking at, as Gene, you just so articulately explained, they're looking at this concern about whether or not there's undue influence in the decision-making processes of the United States Supreme Court. A lot of this generated, again, in the wake of the overturning of Roe versus Wade, this Dobbs case we've talked about again this morning, and whether or not there is undue, inappropriate influence by various groups, lobbying groups, other groups out there. And again, advocacy is a good thing in America, right? I advocated before that you write a letter to justices and other representatives about things that concern you. The question is whether or not there's undue, inappropriate influence in such a way that affects those decision-making authorities. And in particular, a lot of the focus, again, the prompting this hearing of this past week, has to do with Justice Thomas and a lot of his decision-making. We're going to talk this coming hour about January 8th and some of the goings on there. We know that Justice Thomas is married to Ginny Thomas, and she has a professional career in his own right, which is not only her right, but her prerogative, as any American has. And she has advocated, for example, for the ISLT, among other things, this case coming out of Moore versus Harper. And the justice himself, of course, is going to be ruling on that very issue. And so the question is, among other codifications, other invocations of conflicts of interest and concerns about undue influence, should the justice be resolving that kind of an issue when he himself is married to a spouse who also has some involvement in the public advocacy on ISLT. Also concerns about his vote when it comes to January 6th issues and disclosures of, for example, documents in that area. And so that issue that you raised, Gene, about this committee, very important. And I'll talk more about the implications of that right after the break, including the things that Justice Roberts can and should do to address the very things that the committee was looking at this past week. Stay with us right here on Morning Cannolis.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio. Kelsey Miles. Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
To protect his family from disaster, Steve used his camera phone.
Done.
By taking pictures of his important documents, Steve can always have them stored online. Learn more simple disaster prep tips at ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. High of 37 this afternoon, under cloudy skies, winds out of the northwest, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Lows level off around 29 tonight, cloudy skies expected. Cloudy skies again tomorrow, highs level off around 37. Overcast skies Tuesday, with highs around 39. 43, chance for scattered showers Wednesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 32 degrees.
A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
And welcome back. Right before the break, I was responding to a terrific question raised by Jean, who called in to ask about this work of the House Judiciary Committee, also just this past week, on undue influence on the Supreme Court, politicking, other ways in which we may, in America of 2022 and 2023, may be concerned about the influences on our Supreme Court as they wrestle with many of these issues. Right before the break, I promised that I'd talk a little bit more about Jean's principal question, which is, what can the legislature do and what can the Supreme Court do? We know that the legislature does have a role, that Congress has a role with respect to oversight of the Supreme Court when it comes to things like the numbers of Supreme Court justices. That can be changed by congressional action. It's not a constitutional matter. Lifetime tenure is a constitutional matter, but the number of justices can be changed. Likewise, of course, there's a budget. And believe it or not, the Chief Justice has got to show up to provide information to the House committees and certainly the Senate, others who may ask about the budget of the Supreme Court. Other matters, including this, and the question of the House Judiciary Committee is, do we need to also impose some rules, some ethics rules on conflicts of interest, on other matters that go to the decisions about whether or not justices should recuse themselves, should take themselves out of cases if they have those conflicts of interest. And that's what the focus of this is all about. Also, of course, looking at undue influences that may be not a part of the public domain, things we're not seeing necessarily, behind-the-scenes influences that would be equally problematic. And all that goes to the principal point that I would say in response to Jean's very good question, which is, ultimately, the Chief Justice does have rulemaking authority. We have talked in the past about the fact that the United States Supreme Court is bound by some federal laws, but not nearly the breadth of the ethics laws that the lower courts, the circuit courts, the district courts are. The Chief Justice, plainly, not only in connection with the matters involving Clarence Thomas and the role of his wife in these various issues, January 6th, the ISLT, other matters out there, issues related to even the disclosure of the Dobbs opinion long before it was released formally by the Supreme Court. All these issues raising concerns and questions about conduct and behavior of Supreme Court justices or their staff or somebody affiliated with them. The Chief Justice, as the Chief Justice, does have authority to establish rules and regulations. He is also in charge of something called the Administrative Office of United States Courts and could, in fact, through that mechanism, establish some kinds of ethics rules that are exactly the same kinds of things that this House committee is looking at We will look to the Chief Justice as he wrestles with these public concerns about the Supreme Court. One of the important things that Justice Roberts can do is to wrestle with those, come out with some clear articulations of conflicts rules that, again, prohibit justices from engaging in discussions about and adjudications of decision-making of cases in which they have some personal, private, individual interests. So lots to unpack there, but appreciate very much the call from Gene. We also appreciate Joe calling in this morning from Madison. As always, Joe, thank you for your being a part of our discussion this morning.
Thanks very much. I agree with Gene's sentiments. It's just absolutely invaluable to get your perspective on these legal matters and your thorough teaching of us, teaching to us of how this goes. I would like to return to the subject that you were taking up in the first hour that had to do with a web designer in
yes.
Colorado who did not want to supply her services to same-sex couples, her wedding web design services to same-sex couples, and Colorado was, and she decided that this would be an infringement of her First Amendment rights if she were forced to do so by the state of Colorado. I am really not understanding how the First Amendment right could apply in this situation, and I would offer two other cases that where a person might want to take the same stance and see what your thoughts are. A financial advisor says, I don't like same-sex couples, so I'm not going to offer my financial advice services to a same-sex couple. Would they have the right to do that? That speech, he's talking to somebody in how the material that he presents to a couple is presented in a certain way based on his experience and his knowledge and his thoughts about how that should be presented. A band is playing in a nightclub, and they are adamantly anti-same-sex couples, and they feel that their words that they are sending out in their songs should only be heard by straight couples. How on earth are they going to parse this out? I just don't see how you're going to come, how they can possibly get into people saying, I just won't present my stuff to same-sex couples, my services to same-sex couples, without just igniting a storm here, a firestorm. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts
Absolutely.
On those two examples and how that might play into this particular situation.
Sure.
Thanks, Jim. Really appreciate it.
Joe, thank you for the call. It's always very thoughtful and pointed. And, you know, Joe, you should be the kind of person who's arguing these cases before the Supreme Court, because hypotheticals are what these are all about, right? If we make a decision here, what is the implication, as you've indicated, for example, for financial advisor? Somebody in the arts, and yes, indeed, there's some artistry aspects to this case, this Elena's case, as well as Justice Kagan said. What are the implications beyond just this narrow case and just beyond Colorado itself? Obviously, many other states have equal types of provisions that prohibit discrimination based upon immutable characteristics, including sexual orientation, gender identity, all those other things that have always been prohibited under our civil rights laws. Follow up and reaffirm your absolute concern about this. I join in that. And again, note that from my perspective, that these things can be reconciled. Once again, we're not asking that anyone abandon their own personal private views, their spiritual views about whether or not same-sex marriage is right or wrong. That is what the provider here is saying. But beyond that, we're also asking that the entire world, including, for example, your financial advisor, including people who are artists out there, not engage in discriminatory behavior. That's what the Supreme Court's going to have to wrestle with. And my own view that is in part, the Supreme Court, as you know, has limited this to the free speech aspect of it, maybe not wanting to get involved in the religious side, but it's all tied up, right? And First Amendment rights are very much on the line here. I think, Joe, your point is well taken. We'll talk more about that, other cases, right after this.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
Up North News Radio is Wisconsin's new choice for progressive talk about important state issues, from the team that brings you the news through social media, newsletters, and here on the radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Once in a while, Gene of Eau Claire.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
Once in a while, Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
AP News, I'm Jackie Quinn. The National Retail Federation says buying was strong today on this Black Friday, and retailers are sensitive to consumers who are feeling the pinch from inflation. Kathleen Cullen is a senior director.
We're hearing from consumers that they are looking for sales and promotions. They are shopping at different brands than they would otherwise, and they're also considering discount stores.
At the Macy's flagship store in New York City, shoppers were back without pandemic restrictions. Our Rita Foley reports.
60% off fashion jewelry, 50% off select shoes, says Macy's. CEO Jeff Gannett says there's significantly more traffic on this Black Friday compared to the previous 2 years because shoppers feel more comfortable in crowds.
Police in Lumberton, North Carolina are searching for a gunman who fired a shot inside a Walmart store today. One person was injured. The Virginia Walmart manager, accused of killing six people before killing himself, bought the 9mm handgun Tuesday morning, just hours before the massacre. Authorities also say he left a list of grievances on his cell phone. Our Mike Hempen reports.
Andre Bing blamed others for mocking him. Bing also said he did not plan the shooting. Things just fell in place, like I was led by the Satan.
Authorities say it was a former student in Brazil who broke into two schools on the same street in Espírito Santo State, killing two teachers and a student today. Some people are traveling home from holiday gatherings. There is snow reported in eastern New Mexico and heavy rains in parts of Texas. COVID cases are back on the rise, and health officials say holiday gatherings could push those numbers above the daily average of 39,000. In World Cup soccer action, once again, the U.S. ends with a draw against England. This is AP News.
¿Te tiene agobiado tu trabajo? ¿Sueñas con una carrera profesional donde puedas ganar más dinero y te sientas apreciado? Si tu respuesta es afirmativa, entonces Sigma Castings, una división de Sigma Engineered Solutions en Marquesan y Jackson, es tu respuesta. Son más que una empresa, son una familia de expertos dedicados que abarcan continentes. Te harán sentir apreciado de muchas maneras. Por ejemplo, el nivel básico de pago es de $18 por hora con revisiones periódicas de rendimiento. Después de los primeros 90 días de empleo, tendrás derecho a 80 horas de vacaciones más 11 feriados pagados. Aún más, ganarías un bono de $2,000 por permanecer en tu puesto. Te ofrecen un paquete de beneficios robusto, con primas bajas y excelente cobertura, y su plan de retiro 401k te va a impresionar. Se está contratando ahora para el primer turno, lunes a viernes, de 5 de la mañana a 2 de la tarde. Empieza tu nueva carrera ya con Sigma Castings en Marquesan y Jackson. Encuéntralos en Indeed o llama a 920-260-8560 y levántate en la mañana feliz de ir al trabajo.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Butler to Windlake, always streaming at waukradio.com.
We are back. Right before the break, I was taking this terrific question from caller Joe, who called in to ask about opening the door, if you will. If the Supreme Court, in fact, in this 303 Creative versus Alanis case, decides to rule in favor of the web designer who is opposed to same-sex marriage and providing services to same-sex couples, how does that implicate many other things in our lives, many other situations? And the rhetorical question that Joe asks is the question of the day. It is the question before the Supreme Court, going to be resolved presumably sometime in the next 6 months, probably in May or June. We know from not only Joe's good comment, but others, that the ruling here would be the latest in a string of victories for religious groups and other entities. The court has tended to decide in favor of religious religious liberty. Here, as I indicated, the court has prescribed that the argument is likely opinion is going to focus more upon free speech, but it's all tied up together. And we know that the oral argument of this past week did, in fact, implicate all of those things. And significantly, as Joe's comments so well underscored, a decision in favor of the web designer in this Alanis case would chip away at the right to same-sex marriage that was established in 2015, this Obergefell case. And we also note, of course, the irony of this, that if indeed there is a chipping away of LGBT rights by the Supreme Court, that is contrary to and in opposition to what's happening at the Congress, quite literally hundreds, maybe thousands of feet away. The United States Congress just this past week passing legislation the president's about to sign. It establishes the rights of same-sex couples to not only to marry, revoking the Defense of Marriage Act and affirming the rights of same-sex couples, their certificates of their licenses to be acknowledged in all states. So we've got a mixed bag here. We know as well that the Supreme Court, even since Obergefell, has also said that members of the LGBT community do in fact enjoy protections under Title VII in the employment setting, hiring, firing, terms and conditions of employment, that protected under the federal law for all the members of our LGBT community. What do you do about all this? Again, you write your representatives, you let them know how you feel. And yes, indeed, you can send information, you can send mail to the United States Supreme Court advocating. Let them know that you're concerned about what they may be doing in these cases. We will continue to watch all of those and, again, appreciate very much the phone calls, the observations that underscore the importance to all of us, not just members of the LGBT community, the importance to all of us in America having to do with civil rights and human rights in our future. Let's talk about some other matters that also populated the news this past week in three different areas. Mar-a-Lago back in the news once again. The United States Department of Justice seeking to have the former president's office held in contempt in the documents case coming out of Mar-a-Lago. A federal judge just yesterday in Washington, D.C., ended a hearing on that contempt request, a request by the Department of Justice to hold representatives of the former president in contempt for failing to comply fully with a subpoena, demanding that the president return fully all the classified documents that he may have taken with him since he left office. The court in that particular matter apparently decided to end that hearing without resolving that request with great particularity, apparently leaving it to the Justice Department, the attorneys there, and the former president's attorneys to try to resolve the department's concerns about whether the former president might have more classified documents at his properties. All of this, we know, comes in the wake of these other developments after Thanksgiving. A team of experts that the former president hired concluded searches in some of other locations, including the Trump Tower in New York, his golf club in Bedminster, New Jersey, and significantly, this storage facility near Mar-a-Lago. At that storage facility, we know the team discovered at least two more documents that bore classification markings, just like those that were discovered in Mar-a-Lago back in August, prompting the lawyers in this case to find the representatives of the former president in contempt for, again, continuing to represent that all the documents have been disclosed when indeed they have not been. A strong suggestion that the Department of Justice knows that there are still more documents out there, knows that there are documents that should, in fact, be disclosed. And this attempt going into court, finding that the former president's staff is in contempt, asking the judge to make that finding significant in that. Why are we back in federal court in the District of Columbia? Because it is there. It is there that the federal grand jury that issued this grand jury subpoena, the judge presiding over this matter also presides over that grand jury. So she has jurisdiction over this matter. Under grand jury secrecy rules, we don't know a whole lot about what happened in this hearing, nor should we. But we know that Judge Howell, who is the chief judge of the District of Columbia court there, overseeing these grand jury proceedings is taking this matter seriously and presumably will at some point be issuing a decision on whether or not to hold the Trump representatives in contempt for the continuing, apparently the continuing reluctance or simply the actions in failing to disclose these documents in the past. There's history of that and perhaps continuing to this day. So that coming out of reporting of Washington, D.C., having to do with Mar-a-Lago. We've got another caller on the line, Randy from Madison. Thanks so much for your call this morning, Randy. Appreciate your comment or question about any or all of these matters here on Morning Cannolis.
Yes, good morning. I want to back up just a little bit. You're outlining the Moore case in the Supreme Court. It's finally cleared up a lot of those issues for me.
Good.
And obviously, this is the umpteenth thousandth states' rights argument that South has put forward. I have to agree with Justice Kagan when she asks, why are we even hearing these things? The Supreme Court, the cases that have made history were ones that were opening up progress. And right now, the Supreme Court seems to be trying to find areas where they can take away progress. It's like they've changed their whole identity, their whole reason for being.
And Randy, you know, again, incredibly thoughtful comments here. I think not only joining Justice Kagan in her questioning why it is we're doing this, but you're absolutely right that this is an attempt once again to roll back, if you will, what we've understood for 233 years in America. This is how we do it. We've got courts that resolve these issues, courts that resolve facts and figures and make decisions about elections. Why are we doing this? Again, coming out in many ways, an awful lot of people believe, coming out of the 2020 challenge by the former president, a part of this notion that the states, as you indicated, Randy, the states have got these rights to do it. Courts have rights to do these things as well. They've been vested with authority, the principles in our Constitution and in the ways in which we do justice in America, all of that contemplated. Many, many other things, as we've talked in this broadcast, as the Supreme Court should be talking about. Randy, along with you, I am hopeful, I am cautiously optimistic that in June we'll get an opinion that in no way embraces this ISLT and hopefully puts it to bed finally and dispositively. But it's going to be close, and we'll continue to monitor, Randy, with you and others, what happens there in the United States Supreme Court. We're also talking about other events of just this past week. The January 6th committee, very busy again, as it readies its report. The chair of that committee, Benny Thompson, has indicated that on December 16th, yes, this coming Friday, this major report is going to be issued. And just a programming note here, next Saturday, as we go into the holidays here in the midst of this season, we're going to devote virtually the entire hour to what that report says, assuming that is indeed released by the House Select Committee on January 6th. We're going to take a look at what that report says, and we're going to do some quick analysis between its release on Friday and Saturday morning. We're here, so tune in for that. And presumably, a lot of things in that report we have discussed in the national media, in our national discussions about what the January 6th committee has done, but also perhaps some surprises, maybe some new information coming out of that report. We also know this past week that the House committee, the House Select Committee, has indicated it's going to be making referrals to the United States Department of Justice for prosecutions. Again, we know as a civics matter that the House committee itself can do two things. It can investigate, it's got oversight responsibilities, and it can also do something else, and that is decide on recommendations for legislation. And presumably, this report will not only give us findings it has come to as a result of its review, its interviews with witnesses, its review of documents, it's going to, if you will, codify the results of its oversight in this matter, and perhaps also make specific recommendations about legislation that should be passed, by future Congresses to ensure that the kinds of things that happened before, during, and after January 6th do not happen again. We know that some of that legislation has already been on the floor of the House and the Senate, passed by the Congress. What else needs to be done to ensure that this doesn't happen again, that the challenge to our democracy on January 6th is not repeated in January, even before, after that, in 2025, after a next election, or after any election? And so a lot of that, presumably coming out of the report, we're going to be taking a close look at that. And as I indicated, one of the other things that Benny Thompson commented about this past week is that we're also going to make referrals. And I will once again offer some insight into this. Referrals plainly needed when it comes to contempt. We know that people like Steve Bannon already found in contempt for failing to cooperate with the committee. We know that Peter Navarro is going to be tried for that in the near future. And we also know that the committee may indeed be making other criminal referrals for contempt of Congress. Some of the names, Donald Trump, Mark Meadows, John Eastman, Rudy Giuliani, Jeff Clark, all those people subpoenaed by the committee, varying levels of cooperation. So it may be that those referrals relate to contempt of Congress and the failures of those people to provide information and testimony. That could very well be. If the referrals go beyond that to substantive issues, so that is involving, for example, seditious conspiracy, which we've seen in other settings out there, other matters related to actual substantive crimes coming out of January 6th, the committee can certainly do that. And the mail is open between the Department of Justice and the House of Representatives, the Congress generally, but it's not necessary as a matter of procedure. The Department of Justice has complete authority when it comes to these kinds of things, as we have seen, to prosecute people involved in January 6th over and above contempt citations, contempt situations. And so when, in fact, the committee makes these referrals, we'll take a look and we'll comment on what kind of referrals these are. Contempt referrals, entirely appropriate. Those need to be done for the Department of Justice to prosecute further. Not necessary for the Department of Justice to go ahead on its other substantive charges. Again, focusing on many of the same people who may, in fact, be the subject of referrals by the House Committee. So we'll talk more about that in the future. Big news coming out of the House Committee this coming Friday and beyond. Finally, we also know that this past week we got a guilty verdict with respect to the Trump real estate business, the family real estate business coming out of the state of New York. This major case, conviction of all 17 counts, finding that the Trump Corporation, the company itself, guilty of tax fraud and other financial crimes, culture of fraud and deception is what the prosecutors described this as. The Manhattan District Attorney's Office, Ellen Bragg, as we know, led the case against these true Trump organizations. Entities. Previously, that office had gotten a guilty plea from the architect of the scheme, this fellow named Alan Weisselberg, the company's very long-serving chief financial officer. Weisselberg had testified during the course of this trial, a major portion of the prosecution. In this case, of course, the prosecution did not charge the former president, but his name invoked repeatedly during the course of this month-long trial, his name appearing on checks, on other documents authorizing certain conduct that was, in fact, the focus of this trial. Among other things, jurors told that the former president personally paid for some of the perks and even approved a crucial aspect of this scheme when it came to the overall evidence of this illegality presented to the jury. Again, a conviction of the Trump Corporation. Right after the break, we'll talk more about the implications of that and then conclude. We'll go back to Congress for some other matters that it took care of early this year. Stay with us for those final comments here on our weekly review.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News. On an earlier edition, we talked to three women, med students, about whether they're going to stay in Wisconsin to practice medicine.
All this Roe v. Wade stuff, and now OBGYN's hands are so tied. I don't want to go through 12 years of training to have some person that didn't do training tell me how to do my job.
It is not a binary choice. You're for or against abortion. It is a healthcare decision. We all have those stories, and people want to hear them.
Don't miss the real stories here on Up North News.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to the Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. only on WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, The Shaw.
Self-monitor your blood pressure in four easy-to-remember steps. Self-monitoring is power. Visit managerbp.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Heart Association, and the American Medical Association in partnership with the Office of Minority Health and Health Resources and Services Administration.
Here's your updated forecast on The Shaw. High of 37 this afternoon, under cloudy skies, winds out of the northwest, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Lows level off around 29 tonight, cloudy skies expected. Cloudy skies again tomorrow, highs level off around 37. Overcast skies Tuesday, with highs around 39. 43, chance for scattered showers Wednesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 32 degrees.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Wisconsin's home for rational talk radio.
Welcome back to our final minutes, our final moments together this morning on Morning Cannolis. We were chatting right before the break about this very significant conviction in the state court, in New York, Alvin Bragg, the DA, accomplishing a conviction of the Trump Organization with respect to tax fraud cases, other financial cases. The question, what happens now? What happens now that a corporation has been found guilty of this felony? Well, we know that the maximum penalty it faces is about $1.62 million. That's not insignificant. And we also know, of course, that the corporation can't be thrown in jail, unlike a person. But there are certainly going to be implications for this particular entity. The Trump Corporation and the Trump Payroll Company are not necessarily quite central to the Trump's overall money-making enterprise. They largely perform some back-office functions, employing and paying top executives, and so may not hold any loans or licenses or other privileges that may slip away in the wake of the conviction. On the other hand, the Trump Organization, a collection of more than 500 corporate entities, two of them again on trial. This is significant. Being a felon, even as a corporation, could make it harder to retain employees, harder to engage in transactions with other entities out there, banks and other financial institutions looking at these two particular entities and saying, gosh, you know, we've got opportunities with others. Why would we necessarily engage with a company that's been found guilty, especially of tax fraud and of financial crime? So we're going to see how that all plays out. Even efforts to expand the company, if you will, are going to be stymied by this. Not an insignificant consequence for the corporation overall as this goes forward. We're going to be hearing more about, of course, the sentencing of that corporation, of the Trump entity in the future, and we'll see down the road about the impact of that, along with the related case involving the state attorney general, also in New York, suing for about $250 million, also a consortium of those Trump companies that related to valuations of real estate properties in the state of New York by Trump officials. The attorney general there having already appointed a special monitor to oversee the conduct of the Trump Organization, trying, if not to shut down the corporation completely, to prohibit the Trumps from ever again being a part of a board of directors. That, again, a part of the
parallel civil case being brought and litigated by the state attorney general, her name, Letitia James, there in the state of New York. Lots and lots of things going on, lots and lots of things to take in, both in the courts and outside of the courts, the federal system, the state system, all of that happening in America. I began this program today talking about Brian Williams and his concerns about the future of America. He talked about the darkness of the edge of town spreading to the main roads and highways and neighborhoods. I want to conclude today by once again invoking Brian Williams' invocation, his encouragement to all of us to do things. What you must do now, he said, the things that should not only scare us but also inspire us to act. And I want to talk again in our last few moments about something we're going to be revisiting in the new year in 2023. And that is some other good things that happened in early 2022 in our United States Congress. Two pieces of legislation in particular, I'm going to spend a greater amount of time in the future chatting about them, sort of on the one-year anniversary of their enactment. But we know that back in March of this year, major piece of legislation ending more than 100 years of failed efforts by the federal government to specifically outlaw lynching. Back in March, the president, President Biden, signed a bill that finally made lynching a federal crime for the first time in our nation's history, criminalizing this act that had come to symbolize the grim history of racism in America. At the time, the president said lynching was pure terror to enforce the lie that not everyone belongs in the United States of America. Not everyone is created equal. He was speaking at the time to civil rights leaders and others at the time of the signing of that. He signed this law. It was named after Emmett Till, the young African-American boy who was murdered in Mississippi in 1955, the president at that time describing, as many of us know, as all of us know, the atrocity that he said was carried out against 4,400 black citizens, our fellow residents between 1877 and 1950, lynching in America today made specifically a federal crime, could be the subject of federal criminal indictments by grand juries and federal criminal prosecution, another thing in the quiver of federal prosecutors to address these kinds of outrageous and horrific and destructive behaviors with respect to people of color in our nation. The president at that time said terror to systematically undermine hard-fought civil rights, terror not just in the dark of night, but in broad daylight. Innocent men, women, and children hung by nooses from trees, bodies burned and drowned and castrated, their crimes, trying to vote, trying to go to school, trying to own a business and preach the gospel. All those things said by our president at the time of the signing of this major legislation, bringing again an end to 100 years of efforts by the federal government to specifically outlaw lynching. It makes lynching punishable by up to 30 years in prison, passed by the House in February, passed by the Senate in that same month. Again, bringing to a close this effort over many, many years to bring lynching into the scope of federal prosecution. Very significant this past year. Also this past year, about the same time, same president, President Biden signed into law, finally, the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act of 2022. Bipartisan legislation, once again. Passing an omnibus appropriations package. One of the driving forces, of course, of President Biden's career had been fighting back against abuses of power. That force led him to write and champion this groundbreaking Violence Against Women Act as a U.S. senator, landmark legislation that was first passed in 1994. During the course of many years, it was reintroduced, strengthened in 2000, 2005, and 2013. Each time the Congress reinitiated, rejuvenated the Violence Against Women Act, expanding access to safety and support for all survivors and increased prevention efforts. This past of spring. Again, March of 2022, the 2022 reauthorization of VAWA strengthened the law once again. A real, real accomplishment for women and for men also in America, reauthorizing all current VAWA grant programs until 2027, providing important financial support, in many cases increasing authorization levels to ensure all of this happens, expanding criminal jurisdiction of tribal courts to cover non-Native perpetrators, establishing federal civil causes of action, all sorts of other things accomplished by the reauthorization of VAWA in the spring of this past year. We're going to talk more about that in 2023. Again, a reaffirmation today about what our Congress does in fact do when it acts in the best interests of all Americans. We're going to talk next week a little bit more about that and take on, again, this major report coming out of the House Committee. Join us next Saturday, every morning here at Morning Cannolis. Thank you once again for joining me today. Take care, everybody.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
Man, I love my kids so much. I once sat for 3 hours in the cold rain to watch her soccer team lose by 18 goals.
I love my kids so much. I once used a tube to suck snot out of her stuffed nose at 3 a.m.
You win.
Love your kids? Love them enough to make sure they're in the right car seat. From toddlers to tweens, visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat to find the right seat for their age and size. Keep them safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.